Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time on the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Thursday, May 27th, 1971. That's a joke, ladies and gentlemen. It is actually 2021, but everybody knows I've been talking about this show forever. I've been planning this show forever. I've been thinking about this show forever. And so without further ado, I'm going to bring on the legendary Chicago reporter. Well, he's not really from the reporter anymore, but I got the reporter on my mind, Mick Dumke. Mick, are you ready to do this?
Let's do it, man. We've been doing this show offline for like years. So now the difference is that Nate is joining us and we're recording it. That's the only difference. So,
all right, let me set it up. Mick Dumke is much younger than me. So I was actually alive in the year 1971. I was already a teenager and I was an avid listener of AM radio. So I was listening to the music in 1971 in real time. Mick Dumke's a pretty extraordinary guy that he looked back and listened to music that came before him. And so by the time I met Mick, which was in the O's, he had already assembled in his mind a list of his favorite songs of all time. And he had come to the conclusion that the greatest year for records was 1971. And folks, I have to tell you, I never thought about it in those terms until I met Mick. We started talking about it. I go, well, why 1971 as opposed to any other year? And I have since come to the conclusion that I disagree with the premise of this very show. I believe the greatest year for music was 1973. But who cares? Most people agree with Mick. And now that we're in the 50th year anniversary from the 1971, there are all kinds of articles coming out, specials, documentaries about the great year, 1971, for music. And I'm like, you stole this from Mick Dumke. Mick, you should get yourself a good lawyer and sue these little bastards because they stole your idea.
That's right. If only we'd done this show like before this year, then, our stamp would be all over. Instead, we've just been talking about it. Although I will say, Ben, it's out there because I had somebody tweet at me the other day. Someone else in the Twitter world, whatever, had written something about 1971 and great music in 1971. And someone I don't even know, except through Twitter. Like, I don't even know this person's real name. All I know is his Twitter handle. Tweeted at me, Mickey D, 1971. So you're right. There's at least a small band of three or four people who know that I keep talking about 1971. Yeah. You know, and have been for a while.
Well, one more time. Apple, who came out with their little documentary that they're so happy with. Mick Dumke was so far ahead of you. Just saying, all right? So at least give him a credit or a shout out or something. All right, enough.
That's right.
So anyway, I got so inspired by 1971. And so this, that I'm going to do a whole series, ladies and gentlemen. It's just the first. I'm going to do 1971 in politics, 1971 in sports, and 1971 in movies already. I got Sergio Mims. He's coming on next week. We're going to do 1971 in movies. Ali Frazier Fight One will probably be an entire segment of itself. I've already booked boxing guests for that. So I'm really into this, 1971. It's not even my favorite year, but I'm really into it, Mick. So, all right. Since it's your idea, Mick, we're going to do a top 10 countdown interspersed. I'm going to read the top three lists that we've gathered from various people in our little universe, including my wife and my bowling captain, the captain of my bowling team. Stacey Davis-Gates has weighed in. Dr. D, Dennis, the producer of the regular Ben Jarofsky Show podcast, has weighed in. He already announced his top three on today's live show. So we have a bunch of other people who are weighing in with their top three. Mick and I are going to do top 10 records. So everybody who's listening, get your paper out, get your pencil out, because let's pretend it's 1971. So you don't have a computer to keep track of this. Write these down, then run, don't walk to your nearest record store and buy the LP. Let's pretend like it really is 1971. If that doesn't work, go to Spotify and check out these great records from 1971. And we'll start with Mick Dumke and number 10.
My 10th favorite from the year. Now, first of all, this is not a qualification. It's an explanation. But these are just my favorite 10 records from the year. Currently, first of all, it can change because you get into certain things at different times. So the list is always shifting. But it's also, I'm not playing critic here. These are not what I think are the 10 greatest necessarily, although I think in most cases they are. But these are just my favorite 10. So I just wanted to explain that. That said, my 10th favorite currently from the year 1971 is Pearl by Janis Joplin, which I believe was released soon after she had died, actually. So it was her last album and by far her greatest album.
Now, why do you have this on the list?
I've always loved Janis. I love her way she's saying, the passion she's saying with. You know, she's a white woman from Texas. She studied her blues. And on this album, she got into country. I mean, the greatest track on the album and the greatest track by Janis Joplin is Me and Bobby McGee, written by Kris Kristofferson. And to me, the album warrants listening to just for that song alone. But there's a ton of other good stuff on there too. It's just a great album. Some of the songs she wrote, others are covers. But it's just full on Janis, that mix of rock, blues, you know, white girl's soul and touches a country. It's a great record.
Well, I got to say that Janis Joplin is one of those performers that does not, for me, this is me speaking, does not stand the test of time. And I, and Mick, you and I may have mentioned this before. There's many groups like this. I really listen to them in the at the moment. And then as time goes on, I like them less and less until now. Some of them, I just can't stand the sound. Like I would say, I always get in trouble for this, but Graham Nash, if I cannot stand the sound of Graham Nash's voice anymore, I'm not like, just Crosby, Stills, and Nash, forget it. I just can't stand it. If I hear Sweet Judy Blue Eyes one more time, take that radio. So, but Janis Jackson, man, I got Chicago politics in my mind. Janis Joplin, it's in that category, but I'm with you on man, Me and Bobby McGee. When I hear that song and that opening line, you know, Bobby flagged the diesel down in the pouring rain, I just like, that's great poetry.
It's great. And I'll agree with you on one extent. I mean, when I was younger and heard less music, I probably liked her and this album even more than I do now. In some ways, it's still on my list because I feel a certain loyalty to how much I loved Janis when I was like a teenager. I can remember like driving around, you know, the town I grew up in with my friend. We're driving down to the beach. We turn on, put on Janis on the tape deck and jam that stuff. But for instance, one of my favorite songs in the album is Cry Baby, her cover. It's great. But then I heard an earlier version of it by this fairly obscure soul singer named Garnett Mims. And it's better. It's better than Janis's version. It came out several years earlier. So, you know, I acknowledge the fact that Janis studied and in some ways copied from her predecessors like Big Mama Thornton and other blues singers. But I do think this album shows her really coming into her own. And that's why I still stand by it.
All right. I will I'll allow you that since it's your list. All right. I got to start my my list with sort of a confession. Some of these selections on my list will make me the subject of much ridicule and mockery from my friends of the really cool and hip persuasion. I have a few of those. I can't help it, Mick. I am who I am. And so I want to say that my list differs from Mick because I have like two lists. One is the list now, which I will recite, but there's also the real list, which is the one I would have created back in 1971. Now, again, that age difference, Mick could not have done a list in 1971 because for a good chunk of it, he wasn't even born yet. I, on the other hand, was listening. So a moment of confession, I would definitely have had the Carpenters on that list. They had a great album that year, but they're not. They have not stood the test of time, much like Janis Joplin.
The Carpenters are not at all like Janis Joplin. You can argue that neither has stood the test of time, but say the Carpenters are much like Janis Joplin. No, incorrect.
I would totally disagree. There are two songs from the Carpenters album 1971 that are still outstanding. When they come on the radio, I crank it up. Rainy Days and Mondays and Superstar. I will now restrain myself from singing Superstar. Mick is like, thank God. By the way, we can't play any bits of it. We had our attorney, Nate, look into this, and he said the cost of making drops, Mick, would have been astronomical and would have probably opened us up to lawsuits, which would have been great for publicity, but probably not good for the reader that sponsors us. All right, number 10, Chicago 3. Yes, Chicago 3. I was a huge fan of Chicago back in the day. No one will admit that they like Chicago, okay? All right. But I loved them back in the day, and I still love them. There's three songs on this record, Mick, that I love to death. One of them is a song called Low Down. Whenever it comes on the radio, crank it up, Low Down. I'm not going to sing it. And then there's a song that's an instrumental, Happy 'Cause I'm Going Home. I cannot convey how much I love that song. Millennials, go out and check it out. There's a cover version of it by a guy named Charles Erlin, which is even better than the Chicago version. In fact, Charles Erlin did a cover version of Low Down, which is even better than Chicago's version. So you're saying, well, Ben, why don't you have Charles Erlin on your list as opposed to Chicago? To which I say, that's an excellent question, millennials. Thank you for paying attention. And the answer is, Mick Dumke, that those albums by Charles Erlin came out in a different year, which just goes to show you how arbitrary this whole thing is. But Charles Erlin, like me, okay, this is the only thing Charles Erlin and I have in common. He's a great jazz musician, plays the organ. The only thing we have in common is that we were listening to Chicago back in 1971, and we liked it so much. I sang it, and he turned it into some great songs. So Chicago 3, in my opinion, belongs on the list, if only because I wore out the grooves back in 1971. All right, Mick, what's your number 9?
Well, again, Ben, it's your list, and I'm not a huge Chicago fan, but I, you know, appreciate that you love what you love and you're still listening to or admitting that you turn up Chicago and the Carpenters, everybody. This is the only person I've ever heard who turns up the Carpenters. They are the definition of soft rock, and Ben turns that stuff up when he hears it. God bless you, Ben.
Hey, hold on. Before we go further, you're telling me on the record with Nate recording this, so it could be held against you in a court of law if it came to that, that you are not a fan of the song Superstar by the Carpenters?
Not a huge fan. I just don't really like the Carpenters sound. It's just kind of too wispy for me. There's no soul in it when I listen to that music. But I, you know, you're not the only person I know who appreciates their musical talent. I mean, they did have talent. They could sing, they could write songs. I don't really care for them as performance artists. But that's, you know, again, these are not, there's no right or wrong answers here, Ben. You like what you like. So.
But by the way, that's I just have to point out to our listeners, you can't see him, but Mick Dumke is wearing his I Love Captain and Tennille t-shirt. no, just kidding. He's not wearing it. Just had to do that to Mick.
I don't think I own it, but I did at one point in time own a Captain and Tennille album. I'm not sure if they made more than one album, but it was the one that had Love Will Keep Us Together on it. And I wisely purged that from my collection during a move many years ago. So anyway.
Cannot stand that song. Cannot stand that song. All right. What's your number nine, Mick?
Number nine is one that is probably less familiar to a lot of your listeners, but people who are really record collectors or music heads might recognize it. It's an album called Like a Ship Without a Sail by Pastor T.L. Barrett and the Youth for Christ Choir. This was as it sounds like, a local minister and a local choral group in Chicago who cut this album in 1971. It is just incredible. It's a gospel record, but it's just this album, the way it was recorded, is just infused with soul and a little bit of funk. And it's an amazing headphones album. I believe it's been sampled repeatedly by different hip hop artists. But I would encourage anyone, if you're looking for something new, to go check this out. We're probably not supposed to actually recommend Spotify anymore, Ben, because they don't pay their artists squat. But you can find this music out there. And if you like it, I would encourage you to actually purchase a copy and pay the surviving artists or the record company that has reissued this record to make sure that it's not lost to history. Like a Ship Without a Sail by Pastor T.L. Barrett and the Youth for Christ Choir.
All right. By the way, I should point out, I have my Spotify rule. I don't know if I ever shared this with you, Mick, before. This is the Ben Jarofsky Spotify rule. I completely agree with you wholeheartedly that they rip off their artists. And part of the reason why that Nate and I decided that to drop the songs is because that's kind of ripping off the artists too, if you will. And so everybody's got to make a living. Some make more of a living than others. But so Spotify does rip off its artists. So my rule is, if the artist has passed on, I'm free to listen to them on Spotify. And for me, Mick, you just pointed out that you've picked up this record, or you've discovered this record, like within the last 6 months or so. About the only good thing I could say about the pandemic is that it forced me to sit at home and listen to music. And I really discovered a whole bunch of music that I had never even listened to. Mostly jazz from the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. And almost every artist has passed on, so I don't feel guilty about it. And I kept these people, by the way, jazz artists, I kept them out of my list because I just thought, you know, that wouldn't be really truthful to where I was in 1971. I wasn't listening to, who am I kidding? Who am I, David Remnick or something, making stuff up as I go along about myself? So no, I hear you, Mick. It's really good that you continually expand your horizons, listen to new stuff. And maybe a year from now, your list will be completely different. All right. My number nine would have probably been a lot closer to number one back in 1971. May have been number my second favorite album in 1971. And that would be Imagine by John Lennon. I'm a huge Beatle fan, Mick. Ramona, when she comes on the show, we talk about this. Ramona's a big Beatle fan as well. Ramona Hussein, a regular in the Ben Jarofsky Show, and Mick Dumke's wife. My favorite Beatle by far is John Lennon. And Imagine, I just love that song, Imagine, the utopian song. Mick, it got banned by some radio stations in 2001 after 9/11 because what? We were so war hungry after 9/11. You couldn't listen to a song that articulated the need for peace and understanding. Every time I get choked, I'm getting choked up just thinking about John Lennon, and I still can't believe someone killed John Lennon. There's another person we'll talk about who was killed, shot, gunned down. That's on both of our lists. And I just, every now and then, Mick, I'll just go through my course of my day. I'll think about John Lennon, how funny he was, how dark he was, how sharp and bitter he was, but also how like naively idealistic he was. And that's all embedded in Imagine. And it also has a song, Jealous Guy, which I would argue Donny Hathaway's version is the better version of Jealous Guy. I could argue that. We could do a whole show on that, which is the better version of Jealous Guy. But Imagine, I love you, John Lennon. A little shout out to John Lennon. That's my number 9 album. You have any thoughts on Imagine, Mick?
I like that album. I also love the Beatles as a group and their solo work. It's funny. I actually, the last couple of years, have been listening to a lot of solo Beatles, more than the Beatles albums as a group. I do like Imagine. It's not my favorite Lennon album. And I have to admit that John is not my favorite Beatle performer. I'm in the camp, Ben, that thinks that Paul has gotten a bad rap through the years, and in part because he lasted and kept making albums. And it's been fun to see Paul have kind of a critical comeback over in recent times. It's been a real reevaluation of Paul's work. So my favorite, it's not in my top 10, but I sent you actually a full top 25 list because I went kind of crazy with this. And you probably noticed in my second 15, as it were, Paul and Linda McCartney's Ram was on my list. I love that album. And I know that Lennon Imagine is usually rated higher than Ram, and I'm pretty sure you hold that same assessment, Ben, but I stand by Ram. And I also stand by your point about the arbitrary cutoff of just making this calendar year 1971. In November 1970, perhaps the greatest Beatles solo album of them all was released. All Things Must Pass by George Harrison was released just a couple months before 1971. So a little shout out to George for that one.
Yeah, a little shout out to George. By the way, before we move on to number 8, I just want to read Dennis's. Dennis is, of course, the producer of the Ben Jarofsky Show, Tuesday through Friday. He has Black Sabbath on this list. I don't even know what the name of the album is. I don't know anything about Black Sabbath, folks. I'm just going to be honest with you.
It's Master of Reality, Ben. That was in my top 25, too. So, yeah.
You and Dennis think alike.
You're not a big hard rock fan, but I guess I'm with Dennis on that one.
Yeah, no, I'm not a bit hard. You could take big out of that sentence. I'm not a hard rock fan at all, but but he loves it. And then he was the one who pointed out to me, that's the one with the Ozzy Osbourne. And I go, oh yeah, it's Sharon Osbourne's husband. And then he,
and there, come there on, were guys. A lot of them with Ozzy Osbourne. Okay. He was their lead singer for, their gold. I wouldn't call them golden years because we're talking about Black Sabbath.
But yeah, there's no gold anywhere near that group except for in their bank accounts. All right. And then he has Maggot Brain. I give him a lot of credit, a shout out of love to Dennis for knowing who the Funkadelics are. And then he said Thin Lizzy's debut album, which I was vaguely aware that Thin Lizzy existed as a group, but I always forget which. I always get them mixed up with about a thousand other bands. So that's his list. Are you a Thin Lizzy fan, Mick?
Not really. I mean, I know some of their stuff from classic rock radio. Boys Are Back in Town, I think, is their biggest single. But yeah, they're kind of like, I think of them as kind of, you know, trashy classic rock, like trashy in a good way. It's like, you know, your early 70s rock and roll, you know, lots of guitar and melody. Turn that stuff up, you know.
I like that song. That's that. They're hanging out at Dino's. That's the one. Boys, they're hanging out at Dino's. All right, now before we move on to number 8, we're going to ask Nate. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, Nate does our weekend shows on the Bender. Yeah, we're so big. We have two producers, and Nate's also a disc jockey. Anybody out there looking for a good disc jockey? Nate's your guy. Give him a call. He knows what he's doing. He knows music from all generations, all genres, and he's a jazz musician. So we could play the piano if at your wedding if you want. All right, Nate, what are your top three?
So I have to shout out my dad on introducing me to these. But Bill Withers, Just As I Am. Number two will have to be Gets Next to You, Al Green. And then Roots by Curtis Mayfield.
All right. Well, this his dad, who I know from way back when in Little League Baseball, we were coaches. Believe it or not, Mick, I knew Nate when he was like eight playing Little League Baseball. Can you believe that? He's a good third baseman, by the way.
You know what, Ben? You've been around a while. You were a teenager listening to the Carpenters in 1971. So, yes, I do believe that you've known Nate since he was 8 years old.
I know, man. The guy was good. He could really go to his left very well, as I recall, politically and on the baseball diamond. I share a couple of those records, but I don't want to give too much away with Nate. So shout out to Nate's dad. Man taught kids something beyond playing third base. All right, Mick, what's your number eight?
Quickly, I also really like Nate's top three as well. And two of the three are on my extended list. One of them, I'll talk about it again in a minute. And the only one that's not on my list is the Al Green album. I just like some of the Al Green albums that came out in successive years a little bit more, but that's not taken away from that one. So right with you, Nate. Good call, man. My number eight is Electric Warrior by T-Rex, the so-called glam era in British rock and roll, where groups like T-Rex, Mark Bolan were taking the sounds of the Stones and a little bit of Bowie's glam and just doing this great poppy, trashy guitar rock and roll. It's just amazing stuff. And people who aren't fans, you've certainly heard Bang a Gong, Get It On. If not by the T-Rex original, then if you're my era, you've heard the Power Station covering the offshoot of Duran Duran, the Power Station covered Bang a Gong, Get It On in the 80s. So, but the T-Rex album is just a classic.
Well, you know, we're not going to agree on everything. T-Rex was one of those groups. This is just me talking, okay? T-Rex was one of those groups in 1971 that I would... There were two stations in Chicago. I'll give you guys a little school. Two AM pop rock stations in Chicago and one AM soul station in Chicago. So WVON, WLS, WCFL. So I would like switch from one to the other if I didn't like the song. Never was a T-Rex fan, but I know that song. Bang a Gong, Get On, or something like yeah, I know. So Mick, I gotta tell you, it wasn't anywhere close to making my top whatever. But mine has already been mentioned. Number eight, Bill Withers, Just As I Am. I cannot convey how much I love Bill Withers. There was a documentary, not a special, about Bill Withers. I urge everybody to check it out. It's really good. He just tells the story of his life. Very interesting guy, Mick. He stopped recording. He says, to hell with it. The guy had a string of hits in the 70s. He was making a ton of money and he just basically walked away and, you know, he became quite proficient in investing in real estate, apparently. And he also overcame a stuttering habit. I just view Bill Withers as like almost a spiritually great guy. I'm obsessed with him. And Just As I Am was his album that came out, and it had a song called Ain't No Sunshine. And I had never heard little Benny Jarofsky would be like, doing that refrain, Nate probably knows it because he probably breaks it out where it goes, I know, and he just goes on and on and on. So when they played at the bowling alley on Monday night, Mick, I'm like, I know.
Oh, it's amazing. It's just classic. That album is great start to finish too. Grandma's Hands is, I think the opener on the album, right? And which is just, you know, obviously great meditation on his grandmother. You're right. Bill Withers, fascinating guy who came to the music industry kind of late, late 20s, or even early 30s. He'd been in the military. He'd worked a bunch of other kind of jobs. And you're right. got fed up with the music business and just walked away from it. And, kind of spent time with his family. And apparently, like you said, was successful in other endeavors. But I have not heard a bad Bill Withers record.
No, Bill Withers is the man. By the way, on his first album, I did not know this. I've already ripped Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I cannot stand the sound of that group anymore. But I did not know this, Mick. I would throw it out to you as a trivia question, except that would be unfair. Stephen Stills plays guitar on that opening at the Bill Withers album, Just As I Am. And somehow or other, they hooked up. So, you know, he wasn't all bad.
No, he could play guitar, so they're good. Yeah, good
call. Yeah. But Bill Withers, Just As I Am, his next album, Still Bill, was from 72, which is my favorite Bill Withers album. But unfortunately, we got this dividing line, 71, 72. All right, Mick, what's your number seven?
Number seven is There's a Riot Going On by Sly and the Family Stone. One of my all-time favorite groups, regardless of genre, year, era, anything. And, you know, a lot of people think There's a Riot Going On is their classic. It's listened to it again in preparation for this show, and just because I love Sly and listen to this record. And, you know, it is such a dark, murky album. Reportedly, he was in a drug haze when he made this record, and he didn't have that much participation from other members of the band. Like, he pretty much recorded and dubbed and overdubbed the whole thing himself. Family Affair was the big single off it, but the rest of the record doesn't sound much like that at all. It's just like layers of rhythm and kind of, there's an ache to the whole thing, you know, a quiet anger, a slow boiling anger and an ache to the whole thing, but it is a masterpiece of sound. Maybe not my favorite Sly album. I think I probably like Stand a little bit more, which of course has a bunch of their big hits, including why can't I think of the biggest Sly song ever? Different Strokes, Everyday People, Everyday People, yeah. And Stand. But this album is great. So There's a Riot Going On by Sly, which is, by the way, an answer to a question from one of the other albums we're going to talk about later. So.
Oh, okay. A lot of people I know love this album and put this album on their list. I'm a huge Sly fan. I'm glad you put it on your list, just to give the shout out to Sly family, Sly Stone, Sly and the Family Stone. And I urge everybody, there's a great documentary about Sly. This is like Searching for Sly. This filmmaker goes out to try to meet Sly. And if you haven't seen it, I urge you to run out and see. It gets at the sort of like the essence of the mystique of Sly, and how talented he was, and how self-destructive he was, and how he brought together so many different types of people, like hippies from the 60s, white people from the 60s, black people from the 60s. So he was truly a great guy. It's not on my list, but it has a song, one of my favorites. Isn't this the album with Family Affair, Just a Family Affair? Did I have that right? Or have the wrong song? May not even be on that album. I should have looked that up.
I said, yeah. It's a Family Affair. That was the big single on the album.
Okay. God, I love that song. And you know what? Family Affair is one of those songs where I've heard it a million times, but I have no idea what the lyrics are, except for family. It's a family. And then he's like, one child born. And I'm like, I have no idea what's next. I know the one child, and I don't know what comes next. I'm kind of like just singing along, you know, making up the words.
Yeah, it's got a great groove. You don't need to listen to the lyrics. But if you do, it's about, I think, these two siblings who end up going in different directions. And there's even one about, I think, marital conflict. I mean, you know, and the whole thing is just kind of comes full circle about, like, you know, it's not easy being part of a family, but it's important to work this stuff out, you know, too. So, but it's just a great single, great song.
All right. So my number seven is from a group that I love. It's an oldies group, and, well, 1971. But whenever they come on, goes that volume. And that would be the Stylistics is the name of the album. The name of the group is the Stylistics. They have a song called Bet You By Golly Wow. All you millennials out there, run, don't walk. Okay? It is one of the greatest songs ever. And furthermore, I might add, it's got three incredible covers, including Prince, a cover by Prince, which is, you could argue, is better than the stylistic version. In fact, Troy Laravier on this show made that argument. I took the opposite point of view, Mick, just because it felt like the thing to do at the time. But Grant Green, who's a great guitarist, I urge everyone, this is jazz, his version of Betcha by Golly Wow is so freaking good. But it was the stylistics who did it first, and it's got People Make the World Go Round, which is from a movie called Crooklyn, which may be the greatest movies ever about the 70s. So I just love the stylistics, Mick. And I got to admit, when I'm doing the dishes, I put on the stylistics a lot. What's your thoughts on the stylistics?
Yeah, I can't argue with that choice. It's a fine choice. The stylistics first album kind of set the template for Philly soul in the 70s. You know, you had the Dramatics. You had Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. Why can't I think of the other band? Just a wave of great artists coming out of Philly, and the Stylistics record was kind of the first one to put, you know, set this sort of template for the falsetto vocals and the sweet, you know, soulful melodies and the harmonic singing and everything. So great choice, Ben. I'm right with you.
Yeah, I love the Stylistics very much. In fact, this just got me fired up. I think you may be thinking of the OJs, the other great
OJs group
that came out of Philly. All right, I want to give a list that Stacey Davis Gates was so kind to share with us. Now, she's of the younger generation. She's even younger than Mick, if such a thing is possible. And but her her parents taught her well, and so her top three are in no particular order. She just sent them to me. What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. We're going to be talking a lot about that, ladies and gentlemen. Aretha Live at the Fillmore. We're going to be talking a lot about that one. The Isley Brothers, Giving It Back. A couple people recommended that one. That's the one, the Isley Brothers albums. I do a lot of covers, including a version of Lay, Lady, Lay, which in my humble opinion is better than Bob Dylan's. Yes, Bob Dylan fans, I said it. So that is Stacey Davis Gates. That's her three. Mick, your thoughts on any of those albums?
Like them all. I love them all. And I agree that Isley's cover, to say it's a covers album, doesn't really do it justice, because the Isleys in classic fashion pretty much reinvent all those songs that they do. They also have a great cover on that album of Love the One You're With by Stephen Stills. And you were saying Graham Nash you can't stand, and I guess CSN by extension, but Stephen Stills is also a great songwriter, as proven by the Isley Brothers version on that record. So,
Mick, yeah. I'll go one step further. They do like this extended version on that album of the song Ohio, which is written by Graham Nash.
Yeah.
And it's like I think it's like 7 minutes. Don't quote me, ladies and gentlemen. It's long. And
it's haunting. It's haunting. Yeah. It's like, they put their stamp on all those songs. It's really a fine album. So, yeah.
It's a lot of fun. And I've listened to it a lot.
You brought that up.
While doing the dishes. Actually, two people that I asked brought that up. It's on two people's lists. It's not just Stacy, the captain of my bowling team, and we're going to his list real soon. All right, Mick, number six.
Number six is one of the albums on Nate's top three, Roots by Curtis Mayfield. Absolutely love Curtis. I like pretty much all of his records, but this is my favorite. And I know a lot of people will say Superfly or his debut album, Curtis, both of which are classics as well, but I love Roots. I don't know that it had a big single on it, but to me, it's pretty much the height of like Curtis's psychedelic soul era. So there's sort of what you would think of as kind of traditional R&B stuff on there, but some of the production that he did on this record, it's just like a whole nother layer. It takes you to another place. My favorite song on the album is this track called Underground, where it feels like he's taking you to the underground. It's just it's just brilliant. And, you know, the thing about Curtis is he did it all, right? I mean, he's like a master guitarist. The style of guitar that he played with like a little bit of almost Spanish inflection in his guitar playing was very influential. Of course, he was a great singer. He had his own record label. This came out on Kurtom Records, and he produced it. So he created like a soundscape in addition to all of the songs that he wrote. So, Nate, I'm glad you brought it up because that is one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, I got to give Nate a lot of credit for even knowing the damn album. But I'm a huge Curtis Mayfield fan, as you are, Mick. The guy's a genius. He's from Chicago. He's from Cabrini Green. I don't believe the city of Chicago has honored him at all, except for maybe with one of those honorary street signs somewhere. I don't even know if they've done that. So shame on Chicago for not honoring the great Curtis Mayfield more. This is not one of my favorite Curtis Mayfield's albums. And that says more about me than the album, because I'm more into the melodies and melodic stuff. And you're right, Mick, this is psychedelic and it goes places that little, how 14-year-old Benny Jarowski was just not ready to go back in 1971. come on, Chicago. I think Mick Dumke, he's more of the straight up investigative journalist, doesn't put his opinions in his pieces. But I think Mick will agree with me that Chicago has got to do a better job of honoring Curtis Mayfield than it's done. Isn't that right, Mick?
They should do something. Yeah, I mean, a better job. Anything would be better than what's going on now. I agree. He's one of the giant. His rock and roll. Remember, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a giant of pop music. And I agree. Should do something.
Chicago is so freaking clueless. This is not. I mean, I'm going to refrain here because Mick knows where I'm just going to like. We're all set to rip Chicago, the city, not the band. And they're just so clueless about everything in the city of Chicago. And they destroy their legacy. They destroy their neighborhoods. They kick people out of the city, you know. Always trying to, quote, unquote, beautify the city. Don't appreciate what's in the city. Sorry, Mick. I didn't mean to go on that tangent. Number six, Al Green next to you. And, man, this is not the greatest Al Green album. But it's got one of my favorite songs of all time, which is Next to You. And that... people may know that as a Temptation song, but Al Green does, I don't know, is it the cover? I guess the Temptations did it first, Mick, right? Yeah, that's about right. I think they had a number one hit with it in the 60s. The way Al Green does it is so good. I listen to this song, Mick, conservative, once a week, and the guitar solo in that song is so good. I sing it. I'm going to refrain from singing it right now. I just urge everybody to check out, if you haven't already, Next to You by Al Green. And I just also want to say, Tired of Being Alone is on that album, which was a huge hit. Everybody knows that song. The guitarist for Al Green was a guy named Teenie Hodges. And a small world. I never met Teenie Hodges. I didn't know Teenie Hodges. But his second wife, Linnea Marsh, is a friend of mine. So how about that, Mick? I found that out. Couldn't believe it when I discovered, you know, Teenie Hodges. I was married to him. Oh, okay. Trump my ace. And so, and he plays a hell of a guitar solo in Next to You. Your thoughts on Al Green, Mick?
Oh, I love Al Green. Like I was saying, when Nate was unveiled his list, I guess I didn't think about this album being in my top because my favorite Al Green albums came in the succeeding years, but I can't argue with putting the Reverend Al Green on the list.
Yeah, the Reverend Al Green. This is before he was the Reverend Al Green. So, but he does a couple of religious songs on this album. Right? All right, Mick, number five.
Number five, I think Dennis, Dr. D mentioned this, but Maggot Brain by Funkadelic. I love pretty much all the P-Funk stuff that George Clinton and Bernie Worrell and crew did. In this case, Maggot Brain opens with a 10-minute song, most of it an extended guitar solo by the great Eddie Hazel. So if, you know, the classic rock heads out there think that amazing psychedelic guitar playing started and ended with Jimi Hendrix, whom I know both you and I love, but if you think that it started and ended there, you are wrong. You got to check out Eddie Hazel's solo to start Maggot Brain. The rest of the album is brilliant as well. And for that matter, you got to listen to Ernie Isley, right? Play the guitar. Hendrix literally came out of the Isley brothers, started his career as a member, you know, backing member of the Isley brothers. And they carried on that tradition into the 70s as well. So, but Maggot Brain by Funkadelic, one of the greatest ever.
Yeah, I a big fan of George Clinton. One of the greatest concerts I ever saw. I talk about it all the time. It was a couple years ago, the old people's concert that they do at Taste of Chicago, where they bring on some old band that geezers like me would like. I saw the Isley Brothers there. That's how I saw Ernie Isley, man. Great guitar solo. Still got it.
Still got it. I mean, and he was tearing it up at that show. I agree. Yeah.
You were at that show?
I went to that show as well. I did not. I sat on the lawn with the regular people, Ben. I know you paid top dollar to get close to stage, but yeah.
Well, I paid top dollar to get close to stage, and I'm happy I did. I paid top dollar to get close to stage at the George Clinton concert, which was absolutely sensational. He was just sort of wandering around the stage, Mick, in a haze, a fog. He was wearing his full-length robe. It looked like it was like a cloth sack or something. And I'm like, George Clinton, you are out of your mind. But what a great totally concert nuts, it was.
Especially in these years, totally nuts. When I saw him play a show, it's sort of like George would basically walk back and forth on stage, waving his hands like he was conducting and occasionally grab the microphone and, you know, kind of join in a lyric or two, but he was pretty much like the director of bands and wasn't doing a whole lot else. But man, what a show. Even in the latter years where, you know, obviously the original musicians that made up Parliament and Funkadelic, those bands, they're not touring with him anymore, but he always has surrounded himself with crack people. So it's just an amazing show anytime you get to see.
Yeah, he's got all these young musicians.
Yeah,
it's always something for like an old timer like me when I see young people playing like old people's music. Oh, yeah, it somehow sounds better. You know what I mean? Like a 28-year-old or a 25-year-old playing a P-Funk song. It's like, oh, it's even better than it was in the original version because a young guy is giving me approval. Thank you, young people. I live for your approval. All right, my number five is an album that I must confess I did not love or even know that much of in 1971 in real time, but over the years, I've come to love it. I listen to it at least once a week. Again, when I'm doing dishes or just sitting around the kitchen talking to my wife while she's cooking. This is Gil Scott-Heron's Pieces of a Man. I urge everybody, if you haven't heard it, check it out. There's so many great songs in this album. He was a genius. Gil Scott-Heron. The one you probably all know is The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. I'm sure everybody has heard that at one version or another. But there's just so many great, like different styles on that album. Some of it is really out there, almost like chanting songs with heavy musical, that piano banging in the background. And others is like poppy type songs. All great lyrics, going to make you want to listen to what he's saying. The guy was, I think, brilliant lyricist. His backup band included Bernard Purdy, one of the great drummers of all time, was playing drums. And, of course, his longtime piano player, Brian Jackson, who probably wrote the music to all these songs. So I just can't, Mick, it's hard to explain how much I love this song, but there's just an honesty to Gil Scott-Heron. He was like putting it out there on all of his songs. And of course he essentially killed himself through drugs. He never really kicked the habit of heroin, et cetera, and so forth. And so he was very vulnerable. He exposed his inner feelings a lot. He was unafraid to do that. Got a lot of love and respect for Gil Scott-Heron, and Pieces of a Man, I think, is his finest album. Your thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, it's a great record. I like Gil Scott-Heron too. I don't probably know this album as well as you do, but I've always liked Gil Scott-Heron. He had, and it's just, you know, he's sort of a force with the way he delivers it. What I was going to say is that it's almost like an early rap album you know, because a lot of it is like spoken word with this kind of driving, jazzy, funky backing music. And there are moments where he sings, but a lot of it is, you know, him kind of just delivering the message. And it's really great stuff. Very influential.
Yeah. And there is, Mick's right. It's got some of the songs really don't have a melody, but there's a lot of melodic songs on as well. So it's a great mix. I'm just going to weigh in with Cap, the captain of my bowling team, and truly one of the most knowledgeable men I know when it comes to jazz in particular. He's always sending me great recommendations. His top three, Mick, are the Isley Brothers, Giving It Back, B.B. King at the Cook County Jail, and we'll be talking about this one in a little while, Aretha Franklin live at the Fillmore West. Those are three great albums, Mick.
They are three great albums, and as I'll won't comment, we already talked about a couple of them, and I know you're going to talk about Aretha coming up, but I'll just mention the B.B. King record, which I also listened to before this show, and just, I love that album. It's totally worth checking out. Hopefully everybody out here loves B.B. King as it is, and he does a searing set of some of his best numbers, including The Thrill Is Gone. But it's really worth listening to hear like the opening introductions, because it was recorded live at the jail. And so you hear the audience is, of course, people who are locked up at the time. And like they introduce the warden of the jail, and they introduce the sheriff, or give a shout out to the sheriff for allowing the concert to happen. And you hear all the people in the audience, boo! Then, of course, they get excited when the music kicks in. But it's just like, it's a great album for the music. And then I also enjoy kind of the political backdrop as well. So good choice.
All right, here we go. Let's see if Mick Dumke can pull this off. For 10 trivia points, who is the warden of that jail? Back then, when that album was made.
I won't remember. Yeah, it was the sheriff at the time, I believe, right? Or did they have a separate warden back then?
They had a separate warden.
Yeah, you're right, because I just said that, because they did the separate introductions. Yeah. Yeah.
Nate, who was the warden of the jail back in 19? Nate's like, man. Winston Moore, ladies and gentlemen,
Winston Moore, right.
Who was later a CHA, a board appointee, and was also, little known fact, the stuff I know, I can't believe I know stuff like this, Mick, it's a cry for help. He was the uncle of Tiger Woods. Yes, people don't know that.
No kidding.
Yeah, really weird stuff I know. All right, where are we? We're at number four. Mick, what's your number four?
My number four is, let me just reconsult my list, make sure I'm not getting off course. Journey in Satchidananda by Alice Coltrane. So you said you excluded jazz from yours. I had a couple jazz in my extended list, this one, and then in my second 10, I have Tribute to Jack Johnson by Miles Davis, which is just an incredible funk rock jazz record. But Alice Coltrane is on another plane. It's probably my favorite jazz album of all time. And Alice, of course, was by this point in time the widow of John Coltrane. And this album, she plays harp and piano and is backed by Pharoah Sanders on saxophone, as well as some Indian musicians. So it's kind of a mix of jazz. There's a soulful blues influence, of course, and then classical Indian music. So you hear the tambura, which is an instrument that makes the kind of drone-like sound that you would associate with, let's say, people have heard Ravi Shankar, or you know, somebody making like sitar driven sounds. So it's just a very spiritual album. I listen to this a lot when I'm kind of chilling out, or sometimes I like to put on my headphones and kind of fall asleep listening to this, because you kind of float off into the ether. It's just an absolutely beautiful record.
So my number four is one, Mick, that I think is on your extended list. Aretha Franklin live at the Fillmore West. This got me through the pandemic. It's funny, Stacey Davis Gates as well said the same thing. It's a live album. It's she's backed by a sensational band. And Again, Bernard Purdy is playing the drums, and Billy Preston's on organ. There's just not a bad song on this. Well, maybe her rendition of Eleanor Rigby I could live without. But this is another thing. Like, she does cover versions, so she does Love the One You're With. It's like so much better than the real version, the original versions. Like, there's a song by Bread, which is a group that's even more white bread than the Carpenters, if such a thing is possible. So I don't even like Bread, Mick. Let's just get that one out there. Bread was a little too boring even for me back in the late 60s, early 70s. It's called Make It With You. When Aretha Franklin does Make It With You, it's jamming, awesome song. So, feeling a little down. The pandemic's been getting to me, and I got a kitchen that's filled with dirty dishes. I put this album on, Mick, and it just gets me through. So great. I love it. Aretha Franklin, I miss Aretha so much. She's definitely one of my three favorite performers of all time. So anyway, live at the Fillmore West. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. But yeah, I had to jump in because she's one of my favorites of all time, too. I really like this album. It's not my favorite, even my favorite live album by Aretha. The only critique I would have of it is that I wanted to hear more of Aretha's songs on this record. By this point in time, she'd made a series of just classic albums, including songs that she had written, that her sister had written, covers that she had made into her own. And as you point out, even the ones she covers by like Bread on this record, she does remake. But the song selection isn't my favorite on the album, even though it's still classic Aretha. And for those who are fans and want to explore the canon, just a few months later, she released what many, including myself, think is another one of her high points, which is a live album, Amazing Grace, which she recorded at a church in Los Angeles. It's a gospel record and just a classic. So those who get hooked on Ben's recommendation of Live at Fillmore West, you should move on to Amazing Grace, which came out in early 1972.
Yeah. And by the way, there's a documentary about Amazing Grace. Mick, I don't know if you saw that documentary. It's a film of the performance in the church. And at some point in the middle of the concert, who do you see in the background, at the back of the church? It's a sparsely attended concert. It kind of blows my mind, Mick. 1972, Aretha Franklin was a huge superstar and best-selling, I think, 8 best-selling number one songs in a row or something like that. So she's doing this concert, and there's hardly anyone in this church, and they're filming it, turning it into a documentary. Anyway, out of nowhere, who shows up, who walks into this church but Mick Jagger and Charlie Watts from the Rolling Stones, who happen to be in L.A., that's where this church was in. That's where this concert was. So they happen to be recording an album, and they're oh, wait, there's Mick Jagger. So anyway, I'm with you. We're not alone in loving Aretha Franklin. All right, Mick, we're moving on to number 3.
Well, that was a great transition, because my number 3 is Mick Jagger and Charlie Watts and Keith Richards and the rest of the Stones. Sticky Fingers. One of my all these albums we're talking about, it's redundant to keep saying they're among my all-time favorites, not just 71, but Sticky Fingers. The Stones have always been one of my favorite rock bands, and Sticky Fingers is, if not their very best, it's way up there. Again, listen to this band the other day. You and I were texting back and forth. I put it on the turntable, and even though I've listened to this album so many times, it just still sounded so fresh and so good. And it's that mix of the blues, you know, the Stones' sleazy rock and roll, their take on the blues. And then they had quite a few country sounds on this album too. Wild Horses being the, you know, prime example of that. So it's just start to finish. It's an incredible album. Not a weak moment on it.
Yeah, Dead Flowers, that's a real country song. Would have definitely been on my list back in 1971, but I think I told you this, Mick, I just heard it so many times that I can't hear it again. But that says nothing about what a great rock and roll album is.
Man, just... you got to listen to it again. You'll love it. I know you. You will love it all over again. All right? Because it's incredible. I mean, there's like, you know, it's the haunting stuff. Sister Morphine, they're just singing about addiction. There's Brown Sugar, you know, one of the greatest guitar riffs in rock and roll. I mean, come on. Ben, come back. No, you gotta put it on. Put it on.
Okay, I do know it by heart. Trust me when I tell you, I listened to that album over and over and over again. Number three on my list is another album I've listened to over and over again. I listened to it in real time. It would have been there on my list in 1971. It's still on my list now, and I do listen to this album. And it's I don't think most people would say it's this band's best album by far, but I sure enjoy it. Santana 3 by Santana, obviously. And the big hit was No One to Depend On. But Mick, I know the album by heart. I know every guitar solo by heart. I know the drum solos by heart. If you watch me while this album's on, I'll switch from bass to lead to drum. Then I'll stop the congas all of a sudden, you know. What can I say about Carlos Santana? My wife and I, that's the one thing like we had in common from the get-go in terms of music. We both love Santana. We've seen him a lot in concert. The great Carlos Santana. Carlos Santana 3. Mick, I don't know if you know this album, but it's like I said, it's not one of his more popular ones. Abraxas, which came out right before it, is probably his best known. And I had a job packing ice cream at Peacock's Ice Cream Factory, and I got a paycheck. I went out and bought Santana 3. I think it's one of the first albums I ever purchased with my own money. So much I love this album. So Santana 3.
I love that you are standing by Santana, Ben. I like Santana. I've never been a huge Santana fan. I'm not going to lie to you. I think I have. I think, but I'm actually not sure that I have Santana 3 because I've got several of their records. And when I'm in the mood, I put it on every time. I'm like, why don't I listen to Santana more? So I totally get what you're saying. One little piece of trivia about Santana 3. I believe that was the first album featuring teenage guitarist Neil Schon as a member of the band. Neil Schon, of course, who went on to form Journey after that, which was one of my favorite bands, I'm not going to lie, through junior high school and into my early teenage years. And so while I've never seen Santana live, I did see Journey in the original incarnation back in the 80s. And Journey has recently, the current version of Journey featuring Neil Schon still on lead guitar, I believe is playing Lollapalooza this summer. So yes. Talk about an oldies act that trying to appeal to, I guess, both young and older demographic. Journey still on the circuit. So there's the connection that between Lollapalooza and Santana 3, Ben.
Well, I have a confession to make since we're making confessions. I cannot stand Journey. And I know it was, I'm just looking this up so I get the names right. Greg Rowley, who was also in Santana band, in the original Santana band, I think he was one of the guys who formed Journey. Mick, I don't know what it is about Journey. I don't like Journey. I got mildly annoyed when they came back in 2005 when my beloved White Sox won the World Series. And old boy was singing the song somehow or other. Or was it the Cubs that Journey came back? One of the
The White Sox. Don't stop believing. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, come on. Why are we listening to this song? It wasn't good in the real time. And so
they're from San Francisco, too. They're not even from Chicago. They always had Steve Perry singing that song. And it's like, dude, you're from the Bay Area. You're not from Chicago.
But you should have had a Chicago song. If you're gonna, you should have had a Chicago or a Curtis Mayfield song. Okay? You know? You should have had a Curtis Mayfield. That's my point about this city of Chicago. They
Keep on keeping on. That would have been the right song.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This city will screw everything up. Oh, let's go to San Francisco for our band. No. What the hell are you going to Journey for? Anyway, I went on a tangent. I forgot where we were. All right, let's move it on. We're down to the top two. Number two, Mick Dumke.
Showing my classic rock roots here again. Come on. Led Zeppelin 4. It's got to be. Are you kidding me? Starts out with "Hey Hey Mama," with "Black Dog," got "Stairway to Heaven," finishes with "The Battle of Evermore" with Robert Plant calling out in his distinctive wail, "I'm going to Chicago." Man, what an album. Just start to finish. Incredible, highly influential album. You know, of course, rooted in the blues like Led Zeppelin. I don't need to talk about this album. Everybody knows Led Zeppelin 4. I still love it, even though it's overplayed. Talk about overplayed, but I still love this record.
All right, so confession time. We already confessed this. Not really into hard rock of any kind. But I do like certain Led Zeppelin songs. When they come on the radio, I'll crank it up. Oh, yeah, man. And so this is one of those albums. I didn't discover this album until 1973. So I thought it was a 73 album. I go, oops, behind the times once again. But it's got Stairway to Heaven on it. And so I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, Mick. About I listened to Stairway to Heaven so many times, I literally know every part of that. So every, like when the drum does that little drum thing, and that just when the drums come in, where they go from the acoustic to the electric, it's a little embarrassing how much I know Stairway to Heaven. I've heard it so many times, it's like, I cannot listen. It's in the category of Sticky Finger. I cannot hear this song again. But every now and then, when it comes on, Mick, I listen, and I like go back in time. 1973.
Opening the song, and you're just like, you're drawn in again. You think you're sick of it. And then when it kicks into higher gear, when Jimmy Page takes over, it's like a slow moving ballad, you know. And then at a certain point in time, Jimmy Page kicks in and just unleashes the guitar. And it's just like, oh, it's the one that everybody plays air guitar, air drums.
Yes.
You know?
Well, I do that in a lot of different songs, but yes, everybody does it. And what's really funny to watch is a male baby boomer. When certain songs come on, it's really funny to watch a male baby boomer when Stairway to Heaven comes on, or that song by Leonard Skinner, Freebird. When a Freebird comes on and a male baby boomer, they know the song, they know every lick. But anyway, by the way, Romana, very kindly, gently weighed in. Romana Hussein, it was my fault. I hadn't reached out to her early enough to get her list. And so I texted her. I go, Mick and I need your three favorite songs. And then she wrote, "You texted his wife. Ha ha." She thought I was texting you. Anyway, she goes, "I'm editing." So she's really busy. But Led Zeppelin 4. So there you go, Mick. Remember I said my wife and I, you know, we knew we had something going because we both like Santana? Well, there you go. You and Romana share a love for Led Zeppelin.
It wasn't the original incarnation of Led Zeppelin, of course, because they broke up when we were kids. But she saw Page and Plant when they were touring. I think at some point in the 90s or 2000s, they were touring again. So that's how big of a fan she is. She's actually gone out and seen these monsters of rock playing live. Romana loves, she doesn't talk about it the way that I do, like, and she kind of has to, you know, deal with me talking about it way too much. But she's really into music and she's really into classic rock. So you can always give her a hard time about that, Ben, because it doesn't fit her in a lot of other ways. But she loves her classic rock and she really knows it.
No, she does. She's a huge fan of Bob Seger. All right. Number two on my list is as closest I come to loving hard rock. And even though this group is not hard rock, but this would be the Allman Brothers live at the Fillmore. And 1971 album, Dwayne Allman, Greg Allman, Barry Oakley. Love the Allman Brothers, Dickie Betts. And this is one, Mick, I have listened to this so many times. I know every guitar riff. Stormy Monday and Memory Elizabeth Reed. You know what? And this is an album that my wife has gotten into over the years. I think she loves this album too. So I still listen to it. Mick, it's one of the few rock albums. I still listen to it. and Whip and Post, which is like 20 minutes long. It's like rock and roll masturbation. Anyway, I do love All My Brothers live at the Fillmore. I cannot lie. I cannot rewrite history. I love this record. McDumke, your thoughts.
Not a huge Allman Brothers fan for no good reason, but it's when I there's certain moments when it's like I hear them, they come on, and I'm just like, yeah, I totally get it. I was at a friend's house about a year ago. We were well, this was before the pandemic shut everything down, so a little more than a year ago. But we were getting ready to go see Los Lobos play at Fitzgerald's in Berwyn, and I think I've told you about this before, Ben, but a couple friends and I are like fanatical about Los Lobos. We go see them every time they're in town. So we were getting ready to go. It's a long winded way of saying my buddy had the Allman Brothers on the stereo, and I was like, damn, this is good. You know, like when you get in that deep groove with the Allman Brothers, you're just like, they kind of take you away. So I totally get it. Good call.
All right, I can't help myself. I love it. By the way, so before we get to number one, my wife's top three, Allman Brothers Live, Aretha Franklin Live, and What's Going On, number one. And that's my wife Pam's list. And it's a perfect transition into number one, without any question or doubt. Mick Dumke, take it away.
Yeah, both of us, Ben. We might as well do this jointly. We both have What's Going On, as do many others. You and I, one of the reasons we decided it was finally time after so much talking offline about doing this show, one of the reasons we finally said it is truly the moment was because we were talking about just last week, we hit the 50th anniversary of the release of What's Going On. And so there were a lot of celebratory pieces and tributes paid to that album, and all of them totally well deserved. It's one of those records. You talked about albums that you know so well and you just don't want to listen to anymore. This is like the opposite effect, right? Every time you listen to What's Going On, it's like you hear another layer to it somehow. It just gets better and better. And it's got everything in it. It's just, you know, obviously Marvin's incredible singing. The songwriting he covers, it's just like, it's so topical then, it's so topical now. He's singing about the environment. He's singing about racial injustice. He's, you know, when there's a line, trigger happy policing. I mean, it's just like, it's political, it's social, it's about love. It's jazz, it's soul, it's R&B, it's a little bit of rock and roll. And the second side of this album, because I still listen mostly to vinyl when I can, you flip it over and the second side hits a peak with Inner City Blues, Make Me Wanna Holler. Just that song is just sublime. I could just listen to it over and over again. It's just transformative. It's an incredible listen start to finish.
I'm with you. There's really nothing I could add to what you said. That was a great riff. I'll just say a couple things. I like this album in real time. I owned it in real time. I listened to it over and over. And you're right, Mick. I listen to it once a month at least. Get something new out of it all the time. I shouldn't urge everybody to do this, but I'm saying there was a moment in the early 70s where I discovered the joys of what they call cannabis. Cannabis these days. We're not allowed to call it reefer or marijuana anymore. Cannabis. Mick, there are a few things in life more enjoyable or more pleasurable than getting high and then listening to What's Going On with headphones on. And the little lyrical play that Marvin Gaye does, it's like, I had a friend across the hall from me at this dormitory. He was really into hard rock. He loved hard rock. He loved Jimi Hendrix. He didn't know anything about Marvin Gaye. And so I go, man, put the headphones on. And where Marvin Gaye goes, do bip, 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 bip. He's like, oh my God, man. Anyway, so there's that. But I'll close with this, Mick. I'll get back on my soapbox. I've been on my soapbox now and then, doing my best to resist. The theme of What's Going On is as relevant, if not more relevant today, than it was in 1971 in the middle of the war in Vietnam. War is not the answer. And everybody says they love what's going on, and it's at the top of everybody's list, but no one practices the themes of what's going on. I just see war, violence, shootings, police beatings, everything he talks about, black people killing black people, war throughout the world, Mick, everything he's talking about in what's going on is still going on. And it's just, it makes the album more prophetic, more powerful, more real. The fact that this beautiful message, this really heartfelt, sincere message that Marvin Gaye is conveying through music, the genius of his command of melody, is just, people love the sound, but they're not practicing the message, if you follow what I'm saying, Mick. So that kind of makes it sad in a way for me. Your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, how much of a correlation is there between people who are huge fans of what's going on and those who are ordering military strikes around the world? I don't know. But your point is well made that the message of the album, the things that bothered him at that time are still so relevant now. Absolutely. And in addition to the list that you went through, you know, he sings about pollution in the waters and in the skies. And it's just the vision. It's almost like, you're right, it's like a prophetic vision. It's like a very, it's almost a gospel album in its own way too. But beyond that, I don't think people would revere it, you know, to the same degree if it just didn't sound so damn good. I mean, it is just layered. Nothing sounds like it. People have tried to make albums like that since. And I could go through some, I could go through some artists, but like, you know, some of the great R&B and soul artists, like one of my favorites, D'Angelo from more recent times, you know, a lot of hip hop artists who do layered sounds, great headphones records. You know, this is the place where this came from, was what's going on. So I agree with you. I mean, it's like on every level, the album is just a classic.
Yeah. So I know everybody knows it. And by the way, Mick, I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with you. I'll bet you pretty much every baby boomer in the Clinton administration and in the George W. Bush administration, which were ordering bombings all over the world, was a fan, at least of Marvin Gaye at Motown. Whether they got into, it's pretty much widely considered one of his greatest. Whether they got into this particular album, I do not. What's going on, I do not know. But all right, Mick, we have filled up over an hour, I think. We could probably go another 2 hours. He very dutifully put together his like second 15. So at some point I'm going to drop all this in a column or a newsletter so people can hold us accountable and write in with their top 10 and top 15. So, Mick, I want to thank you for giving me the idea to do this in the first place. And Apple, if you're listening, come on, don't be cheap. Cut a check to Mick Dumke because it was his idea long before you even came up with it. Okay, all right, Mick.
And I will turn around and spend it all on records. Yeah, if you do that. So go for it.
All right, that's the great Mick Dumke. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.